Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Another person calling me crazy in the Fan Run Radio Discord. Dylan says the hatred never did or will go away for Alabama. They make me sick to look at. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you still became, like, if that's the case, and I'm not saying it's not, I think a lot of Tennessee fans agree with that and just hated Tennessee or hated Alabama and worked their way into a lather of hate, just sweat of hate just dripping down their face. I don't know how you watched college football for the last decade if that was the case. Just ultimately, like, just hoping, like, hey, maybe this is the time they lose. I don't know. But, yeah, Dylan posted that in the Fan Run Radio Discord. Appreciate him. You can get access to that by signing up for the 37 Club. Go to fanrunradio.com/the37club. You get merchandise discounts. At certain levels, just get free merchandise every month. Access to watch parties, the March Madness tournaments bonus. I'm not going to win that, boys. I'm down at like 18th percentile in my brackets. It got busted. Working on a lot more cool things to also give to that community. The podcast, the exclusive podcast, should start rolling out early next month as we try to bring some new people on to help create more content and expand the Fan Run family. You can help do that by supporting us, fanrunradio.com/the37club. All right, Sam, about last night, give it to me.
Thank you. We have got some news in college basketball coaching. Louisville has hired seemingly their third choice to be their next head coach. Pat Kelsey of Charleston gets the job. Spent 3 years at Charleston, been very successful in his last two, won 31 games in 2022 and 2023. Won 27 games this year, had spent pretty much, you know, from 2012 to 2021 at Winthrop, was pretty successful there. This just kind of puts into perspective where Louisville's program is right now, not being able to go get their big-name guys. They said that they were wanting to get Scott Drew at first. He said no. Dusty May obviously said no and goes to Michigan. Then they pick up the phone and get Pat Kelsey.
There's potentially even more to this rumor, right? I mean, they could have been possibly their fourth option. Yeah. There's chatter that they also tried to put an offer out to Josh Schertz, the Indiana State coach, mm-hmm. but he has a memo of understanding, or whatever they would call it, memo of agreement with St. Louis, that because we know they've talked about him getting offered that job, and I think he might be saying, look, I want to get my team through the NIT, and then we can talk. But I think St. Louis might have protected themselves and said, yeah, then the offer stands, but you got to sign this and not talk to anyone else. But, yeah, Louisville, boy, kind of de-escalated, right? Went from, you know, shooting for Drew, then Dusty May, then maybe Schertz, and now Pat Kelsey. I was reading about this a little bit last night too. There's some writers that think it could be fine, but you know, for that program, they think they need, you know, an absolute flashpoint of a hire. That's not what this is, but doesn't mean they can't be successful. Time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, Pat Kelsey, he gets credit for being just kind of a jerk, right? Like he's yeah. That's like the reputation surrounding him, right? Just kind of abrasive and. He famously
very loud.
Yeah, and he also didn't he famously take the UMass job in like 2017? Isn't there a story like that he went to like meet with the players and then reneged on the job like 30 minutes later before the press conference? Like, nah, I'm good. I'm actually not taking this job. I've agreed to it, but I'm not taking it. I'm good. Just feels like he's got a couple stories like that, and that's kind of the reason why no one's really hired him away, just because he is a good coach, but I just don't think anybody like really wants to work with him.
Yeah.
I can't imagine this gets Louisville fans excited at all. That doesn't mean it's not going to work out, but I just can't imagine it gets anybody excited. Louisville going the mid-major route is kind of a disappointing end to this saga. No Bruce Pearl, no Will Wade, no Musselman. No even Dusty May. Which, Bob, you had the right friends and the right message boards or the right stories, wherever you saw the rumors, I guess, of Andy Enfield leaving USC. You were right about that, as he has emerged as the SMU front runner and going to take that job, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I feel the best comparison I could draw to that is maybe getting out of town before they get him out of town, kind of like what Shaka Smart did at Texas going to Marquette. I don't know. Maybe a good move. If I'm Rob Lanier, it's got to be like, really? That's who you guys hired?
Yeah, that is a good point when you look at like getting fired. You know, Rob Lanier, who doubled the amount of wins he had from year one to year two, which is almost always seen as a big success, unless it's like 2-4. Going from 10 to 20 is a pretty big deal. I get that if you're going out and you're landing a quote-unquote star. And you could argue about whether or not like Will Wade would have been a star, but that's who he was rumored to, you know, who they were rumored to be after. His ceiling is high, at least. Like with Andy Enfield, like I don't feel like his ceiling's high. I don't feel like his floor is high. Like I just feel like he's a very average basketball coach. And if I'm Rob Lanier, I would feel a type of way about losing my job for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, On Three reporting that he is expected to be the next SMU coach. You called him Shaka Smart, or said that was the best comparison, and you're not wrong. I would just say that, like, I think I had more confidence in Shaka Smart when he left Texas to go to Marquette, and I also had more confidence in the Marquette job. This feels more like Mike White leaving Florida to go to Georgia.
Yeah.
Just a coach that's like kind of dead that just wants to, you know, get a couple more years of paychecks, not necessarily go somewhere and build something. But like Mike White, I imagine in 3 years we'll be talking about him being fired from Georgia for not getting it done.
I don't know. He's got him in the Final Four at the NIT.
I did see that. And maybe Mike White will be better at Georgia. Who knows? But like I viewed that more as like Florida and him leaving Florida than I did Shaka Smart leaving Texas. Because, like, Texas, you just know is hard to win at, and the way the boosters are and just the culture and just everything just feels weird. It felt weird for Shaka the entire time. I never got those vibes from USC and Enfield. Like, it seems like they got along. It seems like he just couldn't get the job done, couldn't sustain that program.
Yeah, and they're going into the Big Ten, and they're just going to become more in the mix of a bunch of teams that may or may not be good. You know, that's going to be tough.
Eric Musselman.
That's the name that started getting thrown around. I haven't heard anything more to that, but boy, it seems like it would make sense.
I don't know who else USC would really hire because, like you would think, like you said, going to the Big Ten, they're trying to make a splash and get a proven coach. And Musselman's about as good as you could get in terms of proven coaches.
Yeah.
Of active coaches that are willing to jump, that could also, you know, you could sell his resume.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Will Wade. His name now is popping up for Charleston, you know, saying that there was some writer that said, you know, he could it might have been Rob Doster with Field of 68. He was saying Will Wade could make Charleston the Gonzaga of the Southeast.
Just wait at McNeese for a couple more years and get a big one, I feel like.
I would say that I agree with you, Sam. It's like it's not like you don't have to do the football path there, Will Wade. Like you've proven you can coach.
Yeah.
Just stay at McNeese and just stay out of trouble.
I feel like almost continuity at a place for him is more advantageous to him than like jumping ship and going to a new college.
You would think so. If he went to Charleston, like it'd almost have to be like a 2-year play at the very least. Or else you become the coach that just leaves a place every time. Like I agree with you. I would stay at McNeese. Unless like McNeese is just terrible facilities and a terrible place to live. Like, I would like to live in Charleston, South Carolina, like at the beach and stuff. That would be kind of cool. So I'm not going to tell Will Wade to turn that down.
I was trying to – is Charleston the SoCon? Is that where they're – is that their conference or are they A-10?
No,
or?
I believe they're in
Come on, you're my basketball expert here.
All right, you can go now. We're done with you.
Coastal, maybe – Coastal Athletic Conference. I don't. Yeah.
I don't. My
Colonial.
Point,
yeah.
Is that where they are?
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. Yeah. The fact that he was calling him, you know, he could make him the Gonzaga of the South. I mean, that's not even close to the West Coast Conference. And the West Coast Conference is not necessarily that strong. So.
It's funny that that's the new phrase thrown around because apparently that's what Buckyball is selling down at Samford, is that they want to be the Gonzaga of the South.
Mm.
That's what he's been selling their fan base on, and he signed a new contract and says, you know, he thinks that he can turn them into, you know, a non-traditional, non-power conference, you know, program that that gets thought of as the elite. So I guess that's what you're selling if you're one of those Group 5 coaches.
All right.
Or non-power conference coaches. Sam, what else you got for me?
Some interesting news in women's basketball yesterday. Ice Cube came out and said that the Big Three basketball league extended an offer to Caitlin Clark for $5 million to play in their 3v3 basketball league. And basically,
just for 10 games.
Yeah, it's only a 10-game schedule. It doesn't interfere with the WNBA schedule, he said. He's basically hey, you know, a bunch of WNBA players go, like, overseas to make more money in the offseason. He's like, why don't you just stay here and make $5 million with me and be, like, a groundbreaking athlete in the Big Three league?
Well, no, that wouldn't make more sense, especially after the Brittany Griner controversy and detainment and all that. Just, like, you know, a lot of players came out of that being like, I don't trust going to Russia anymore. Now, you could say just, hey, don't have any weed and you won't go to jail in Russia. But, like, the fact that she had to go to prison for as long as she did would probably sour me if I was an athlete on going back over there. I wouldn't necessarily trust it. I don't know if Caitlin Clark, you know, what her financial situation is compared to other women basketball players, but I don't think she's at the level of her endorsements with State Farm, where $5 million for 10 games of work isn't an appealing offer. For her, though, like, it almost makes you feel like a gimmick of sorts. And also, like, now that the contract number's out there, I would actually be worried about her safety if she played in that league. I just think you'd have guys trying to make a statement. I think she'd get a couple hard fouls. I don't know. I think if they'd be like, you want to play with the boys? Here you go. And, like, I do think I would worry about something actually happening to her. Where it just didn't feel safe. Where it felt
I feel
gross.
Like, she's competitive enough. She'd be like, I want
to
do that.
Well, yeah, for sure. But the first time she drove to the rim, if she's got, like, a little bit of a hip check, like, I just think.
You don't think she's played pickup with boys before?
Yeah. Yeah, not grown men who are mad that she's making $5 million to play 10 games, though, while they're probably making $100,000.
What surprised me is, that's the team salary cap. Yeah, they're probably not making more than – nobody in the Big Three is probably making more than a couple hundred thousand.
Right. Nor should they. I mean, like, none of them are really moving the needle. Like, I know he begged, like, Kobe whenever Kobe was alive to, hey, come play, do this, and, you know. But, like, nobody there. Like, Joe Johnson's been the biggest name that's played in the Big Three so far.
Yeah.
Like, a 40-year-old Joe Johnson.
I just wondered, I was having this conversation last night with my wife. I was just wondering if she'll be one that would just park more and play more of a perimeter game, not really take it to the hole much, because she obviously could shoot better than most of those guys at this point.
I mean, I would like to see it.
Yeah.
I would like to see it. I just don't know how the other people in the league feel about it. But I'm sure if Ice Cube, I mean, he could sell it as like, hey, you know, getting her is actually going to bring eyeballs because more people watched her play in her 1-16 matchup than ever watched the Big Three play a game before. Like, the Big Three hasn't pulled in 3 million viewers, I wouldn't think, in any of their games. Hell, I wouldn't even be surprised if they didn't pull 3 million people in for their entire season of games if you added it all up. So, like, yeah, it would get eyeballs on there, and maybe the $5 million investment would bring in new advertisers, new eyeballs, and they'd make more money on the back end, which would then raise the salaries of all the boys and all that. Like, I get the business side of it. It just...
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's sending a message. He's already done this with, you know, having Nancy Lieberman and Lisa Leslie coaching in the league. He's very, you know, big about pushing the agenda for having more female impact in basketball and in his league. I think there's a couple of things that are noteworthy. First of all, they're still saying, even if she didn't do this, between her WNBA earnings, which will be, they'll pale in comparison to her endorsements, she'll still make probably somewhere north of $3 million a year, even without this Big Three deal.
Well, right, like, I mean, $3 million is good, but the difference between $3 and $8 million is pretty stark, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, I think they were saying if you really are splitting hairs, she may stand to miss one or two Indiana Fever games in the WNBA.
But I imagine that's a non-starter.
Exactly. I'm sure that, well, I don't know. I wonder if that's a negotiating point for her, you know?
something, the Fever. Like, it just diminishes the whole WNBA. If she's like, I'm going to miss some games of playing this big three.
Yeah. The other piece of it, too, is if she has any aspiration to play in the Olympics this summer, that would be another fly in the ointment, so to speak, because that would probably obviate something not happening. Either she doesn't play in the Olympics or she doesn't play in the big three. It's one or the other, just because of scheduling more than anything.
I mean, she's the crossover star that women's basketball has lacked. Whether or not that translates to people caring about her after Iowa, after she's done in college, is yet to be seen. But for now, she feels like she still has that opportunity to really help grow the women's game. So I guess it all comes down to, how do you grow the women's game? Is it the Olympics? Is it playing against the boys and kind of doing the Billie Jean King thing, the battle of the sexes type of thing? I don't know. I would like to see it.
I think some guys, you know, Travis Scott would have her back, right? If any of those,
sure.
If any of those ex-players roughed her up.
Yeah, like I would say that, like, there'd probably be a league-wide mandate of, yeah. Like, hey,
yeah.
Do not foul this white girl too hard. Like, this is bad optics.
Yeah.
Don't do that. But, like, I also don't think that any of those players who are – some are, like, washed-up NBA players, Katino Mobley, Joe Johnson. But some are also guys that are scraping by trying to make a living and like, continue playing professional basketball. I don't know how they would take to being embarrassed by a 22, 23-year-old white woman out there balling on them while everyone's rooting for the woman. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how that would go. I would watch it. To me, it just feels like the hypothetical that people used to always throw around, like, oh, I want to see Ronda Rousey and Floyd Mayweather fight. I want to see them get in the octagon and see who would win. She's challenging.
Different.
Well, I mean, to me, that's what it reminds me of, though, because you're like, yeah, you want that. You think Ronda Rousey would put that armbar in until Floyd hit her in the face one time. Then all of a sudden, it feels a lot different.
She just better not take it to the hole against Big Baby. That could be trouble.
I'm worried about Royce White, too, the Iowa State guy that wouldn't get on the plane. I'm worried about him, too. I feel like he's got something up his sleeve.
He's complicated, for
yeah.
Sure.
He'd just blame it on his mental health afterwards, and we'd have to give him a pass. So, like, he could just say, hey, sorry. I didn't mean it. Forgive me. Then we'd have a whole different dialogue. Good batch of headlines, Sam. Anything else you need to hit?
ESPN's going hard after Jason Kelce for Monday Night Football.
For Monday Night Football, like, mm-hmm. To put him in the actual booth, or just like to have
like, I think
pre-game,
for like the
like,
pregame
stuff.
Yeah, I think the countdown
yeah,
stuff.
They're saying it sounds like RG3 maybe falling out of favor
yeah.
Over there.
Yeah,
it's gonna make RG3 more of the college guy, or he's falling out of favor there too.
I don't know.
Well, RG3 does what? Is it Get Up? Is it Get Up or NFL Live that RG3's on?
He doesn't do either. Well, maybe Get Up.
I think sometimes. Yeah, I was gonna say I think they have rotating cast that
yeah.
Kind of does.
But not NFL Live.
No, he's not good enough for NFL Live.
Yeah, but
this says Get Up that he does sometimes.
They're saying Larry Fitzgerald may be out too, and I gotta say I hardly recall him being on there on Monday Night Football.
I don't watch Monday Night Countdown. It's one of those things that like when I was a kid loved, but now I'm like just let me know when the game's on.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what they're trying to get back to it. You know,
sure.
Get Kelce in there.
There should be a lot of people should want to watch that coverage and. It should be leading into the game and getting your last-minute gambling advice and you know, your storylines and all that. But me, I'm just like, I've talked about it all week. I'm good. I know what's coming up.
And, hey, it's opening day, Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it's opening day, exactly, yeah.
Today's opening day?
Hell, yeah.
Really snuck up on me.
Yeah.
A couple games have already been postponed because of the weather.
Yeah, Braves.
Braves are postponed?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have Until Braves tomorrow. Coverage on Saturday as we – again, our partnership with the Atlanta Braves. So if you're going to be riding around in your car and want to listen to the Braves, be locked in on Fan Run Radio. Sam, send us a break. Oh, we're getting close. What's the countdown at? Maybe 37 hours? Give or take some minutes, 37 hours, 37 and a half, before Tennessee and Creighton tip off. It will be Tennessee's 10th ever Sweet 16 appearance. Lucky number 10. Nice
yeah.
Round number.
I get, you know, I've been here for most all of them, but I was kind of surprised when I was putting the notes together and saw it was the 10th one. It feels like it's been less, honestly, somehow. But, you know, once you start to realize that this is the third for Barnes and Bruce had three.
So you think 10 seems too high of a number. See, when I saw 10th, I was like, man, that's surprising to me throughout the entire history of Tennessee basketball, which, you know, I'm not going to act like I'm an expert on. But, like, you hear of, like, oh, wow, Bernard King and Ernie Grunfeld, those guys were so good. And you start looking back at history, and you're like, oh, certainly they broke through a couple times there, because I'm the other way. Like, I'm like, yeah, three with Barnes, and I feel like Bruce was there, and I know Konzo was there. And I remember the game against North Carolina from, like, 2000 vaguely. You know, I was at a friend's sleepover. We watched it, and, like, I wasn't really a college basketball fan at that point, or like a diehard or anything, and didn't really fully grasp the tournament, I don't think. But I remember that Sweet 16 and it being a big deal. So, like, there's what, seven of them when you had Konzo, like eight of them.
Yeah, I think it speaks to honestly, there's going to be probably some old school people who will read me the Riot Act, but I just don't think. I mean, there are a lot of contributors to this, but I just don't think Tennessee was that. It wasn't a successful basketball program in terms of deep runs in a tournament, you know. And again, part of it was selection. You know, they, for all we know, in some of the best Mears years, they might have missed out because they just didn't select as many teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's what I really lose sight on when you're thinking about the history of Tennessee basketball, is just the tournament expansion and how many teams were in the field and all that, and how hard it was to actually make a Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Because, like, when did the tournament actually get expanded to, like, the way it is now with 64 teams?
It was, I want to say it was mid-80s, like 84, 85, somewhere in there, because Tennessee had a Sweet 16 run in 1981, and there were only 48 teams in it then.
Okay.
And that had been expanded from the late 70s, because at one point, so let's just talk about this. Tennessee, and when I was doing the kind of the historical check of Tennessee in the NCAA tournament, their first Sweet 16 that counts as a Sweet 16 was 1967, but you have to put an asterisk to that because there were only 23 teams invited, and there was a whole round of, like, I would call them, I guess, play-in games. Tennessee was in the Sweet 16, but they didn't win a game in that tournament. They were automatically advanced to the Field of 16. And then there were however many there were a handful of games. It was like eight or nine play-in games, so to speak, to fill out that Field of 16. So they drew a bye. And then they lost to Dayton. And then they actually played, like, some sort of third-place game after that, and I don't even understand the structure, because it's not like they were in the Final Four, but they played some sort of third place game for the region or whatever you would call it, and they lost that to Indiana. So that was a weird structure. I do remember when it was 32. I was super young, and again, I think that was in the mid to late 70s, and then it expanded to 48, and I want to say 64 expanded right around, again, somewhere in the 83, 84 range, somewhere in that era. So I think that's what contributes to, because we talk about with great admiration and praise for the Ray Mears era, and I get it, but I think that was part of the reason they never, you know, with Ernie and Bernie, you really didn't see anything that resembled a deep run in the tournament.
Sam, do you remember the Ohio State win to get to the Elite Eight?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an intense game. I remember that.
That was fun. I mean, I guess you have to say that was the biggest win in Tennessee basketball history, right? I mean, that's the one that broke you through your only Elite Eight, which is crazy. I mean, like, when you actually look at the Wikipedia for Tennessee basketball, it really puts into perspective just how great Rick Barnes has been here.
Yeah.
And how lucky Tennessee got. Whenever he, you know, he comes available right when you're firing Tindall, and he takes the job. And, like, you know, Tennessee, not a lot of history prior to 2000, right, of even really winning tournament games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So nine tournament wins, you know, just prior to 2000 or at 2000.
Yeah.
When you look at appearances, I think you had 26 even appearances in your entire history, and only, I think, 11 of those came before 2000. 12 if you count 2000. Now, obviously, you know, Bruce Pearl, a big part of that as well, in terms of kind of establishing some type of tournament success or being a mainstay in the actual tournament and making the tournament. But, yeah, like, it is crazy just to look at the Wikipedia and see the lack of early success.
I think I was looking back during the Ernie and Bernie era, which would be around 76, 77, they made the tournament each of those two seasons, but lost in the first round, lost to VMI in 76, lost to Syracuse in 77. And that, I believe, that Syracuse team was, that was earlier in the 70s when it was like 73, 74 when they made the Final Four. It's definitely, things accelerated. Getting to the Sweet 16 in 2000, but then really it coincides with the arrival of Bruce.
So, like, is Friday night a top 10 game in Tennessee basketball history?
Yeah, top 10, yes, I think so.
And, yeah, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean 10, but, like, regular season and postseason combined, like, it feels like one of the 10 most important games in Tennessee basketball history.
Yeah, this feels very different than a Sweet 16 matchup with, say, Florida Atlantic. I mean, they turned out to be a good team. They obviously won that game. This one, you know, you can use the term chalk, whatever. It's, you're playing to your seed. You're a number two, playing a number three. Two teams that are... Creighton's right around the top 10 if they're not in the top 10. They've got to be like 10 or 11. This is a huge game. Huge. And also, what's at stake for Creighton, too? You know, they're in the same boat as Tennessee. Fell 1 point short of the Final Four last year, and that's the furthest they've ever gotten was Elite Eight.
Like, I think when you compare it just to FAU last year, like, Tennessee went in there as a bigger favorite, making the Elite Eight that year, riding off the Duke win, like it felt big and like a big wasted opportunity. But I don't think anybody thought last year's team was good enough to win it all. Now, maybe you could say, hey, we thought this team was good enough to get to the Final Four when you look at the draw, because the draw opened up for you and you would have had to beat, you know, a Kansas State team that wasn't anything special if you were able to beat FAU. So, like, the field opened up. But, like, I don't think anybody thought Tennessee was good enough to win it all. I do think if you actually look at this team, I do think they're good enough to win it all.
I agree with you on both points. I think the 22 team, to me, had a better shot at a deep run, in my opinion, than the 23 team would have. That's why that loss to Michigan hurt so bad.
Just skill-wise?
Yeah, I just think the way Vescovy was playing, the way Kennedy Chandler was playing, I just felt like they were kind of peaking at the right time is what it felt like to me leading up to the Michigan game where that all fell apart.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just don't think the region was set up for a lot of success there. Like, I don't know how we would have matched up with Villanova the next round.
That's true.
But I want to say that was the year they kind of kicked our ass that I was talking about, where they played booty ball against us and just really dominated us in the post with their guards. Like, I don't think we would have beaten Michigan then beaten Villanova. Maybe, though. You know, maybe we could have beaten them then turned around and beat Houston. I don't know. But, like, to me, like, it wasn't set up for as much success. We were mad about our seeding for a reason. We were kind of in that bracket you didn't want to be in, underseeded, I felt like. The team, though, to your point, though, Bob, was playing at a high level.
Yeah, won SEC tournament, and just they just felt dialed in to me. And I'm not going to lie, I was worried about Michigan in the second round, but I felt that was absolutely a winnable game.
Oh, yeah, definitely winnable and definitely one you should have won. I think they just came in hot.
They did.
If Tennessee had, they were kind of the equivalent of whether, you know, if Tennessee would have came into this tournament after beating Alabama or South Carolina.
Yeah.
On a little bit of a win streak and kind of proving themselves. And, you know, if Tennessee, if the tournament started before the Kentucky and Mississippi State game, you'd have had a lot more people picking Tennessee to win it all. Instead, Tennessee had the two little, you know, hiccups or whatever you want to call them. Creighton is probably the second toughest Sweet 16 matchup that Rick Barnes has had. That Purdue team probably, with Carson Edwards, probably gets credit for being better than this Creighton team. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember where they were at metrically or whatever.
But, yeah, they're both three seeds, but, you know, you could argue Purdue was playing coming out of the Big Ten, although Creighton was out of the Big East now. But I do think this game is – there's just so many similarities, too. You know, Will Warren put it out there, too, about that
the tournament success of both programs.
The furthest they've gone, it's identical. You know, Elite Eight and who they lost to in the Elite Eight game, seed-wise, everything. It's like an absolute match.
Yeah, it was something crazy. Since, like, 85, we've made the same amount of tournaments. We've had the same deepest run. And then, yeah, both lost to a whatever seed.
A five seed by
however many points.
Yep.
By 1 point, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
And now we match up. Whenever you talk to me about Sweet 16 history, like, the word that comes to my mind is just pain. This is where my mind goes.
Yeah.
This has been the round that has just brought you so much pain. And, like, it feels like during Rick Barnes' era, every tournament loss has pretty much been its own story. Its own story of pain. The Oregon State game was just pain from, like, that team's roster set up and the COVID, not letting your freshmen get acclimated properly and just not really having an identity and just being wildly inconsistent and the pain of starring Urosh in a tournament game. Last year, the pain was just a wasted opportunity.
That 21 Oregon State game, I know we've beat it up before, but that to me is the epitome of how one and done doesn't work it didn't work for us, you know, and Keon was super talented, Jaden Springer talented, but it just never felt, all season long, it just never felt like it was cohesive.
Yeah, but I think maybe you could have had one of those freshman guards, but having both of them,
yeah,
with your next best player being whom? John Fulkerson? Like, no disrespect to him, but, like, not necessarily a versatile scorer. Not necessarily a complimentary piece with those guards. Yeah, that team just didn't fit. But so, like, I mean, like, you know, then going back, of course, the Konzo block charge against Michigan. We don't need to talk about the Purdue game further. Like, the Sweet 16's just been pretty painful. Blowing leads to Ohio State. Getting blown out by Louisville. Hasn't been fun.
That's what I want to talk about, though, when we come back, is, like, what – I'd love to get your guys' thoughts. We can think about it over the break. Anybody who wants to call in and talk about it too, please do. What's been Tennessee's, out of all these, as far as you can remember, we're probably going to predate Sam's existence on some of this, but what's been the clearest shot to the Final Four that Tennessee had? Because I have a thought or two on that, and I'm sure everybody does, but there's opportunities that have been there. I'm not sure this one's the cleanest opportunity coming up, even as good as our team is. It's got challenges for sure.
Oh, no, yeah. You can't really make the case that this one fits that criteria just because you are playing chalk. Like, you're playing the three seed and most likely playing a team that's been in contention for being the number one overall seed when you talk about Purdue. Like, this bracket has not opened up for you by any means.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that can't be the year that you break through. But, yeah, we could talk about that next. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. The first Nick in the Fan Run Discord points out that the sports line model has us losing tomorrow by one. What the hell does CBS Sports know?
They're
the
ones.
Jordan DeZanny, I don't want it.
They're the ones that seeded us as 12 in the reseed, too.
Yeah, I mean, every computer model is going to have this as basically a coin flip. Whether or not Tennessee's on the right side or wrong side of the coin flip doesn't really matter. It's basically a game where the models are going to have it within a point or a point and a half.
Eli's model had Tennessee, didn't he?
Yeah, by 1.5.
I trust Eli.
I mean, Vegas has this by 2.5. I mean, like it's a very tight game.
Yeah.
Creighton's a good team. I do like our matchup. And when you tell me they play, you know, drop coverage, and when I've seen them get kind of punked physically, like, unless Creighton shoots 45 or 50% from three, I think Tennessee's going to win. Can Creighton shoot 45 or 50% from three? Sure. But they're a good team, which is why, you know, I don't think this is necessarily what you call the best setup. But I do think in terms of Sweet 16 matchups, I do think Tennessee is maybe best equipped to handle their Sweet 16 opponent. Bob, you've went through the history of all the Sweet 16 chances Tennessee's had. What's your verdict on Tennessee's most squandered opportunity?
Well, I think there's four that emerge, right? And if you go in chronological order, the years that I'm thinking of are 2000, which, again, some people may not remember, and I want to elaborate on 2000 in a second because I remember it really well. 2007, 2010, obviously, because they were in the Elite Eight, and then I think 2019 as well. That team was, we felt, really special. And we can dissect any of these. I want to lobby my vote for 2000.
I mean, to me, I think this is the obvious answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that you went through the first round, beat Louisiana Lafayette, took care of UConn, which UConn was kind of the peak of their success at that moment. They, you know.
Well, they were defending national champions.
Right.
And they came in, I think, only as a five seed, though. So, like, they weren't as powerful, but they were at least, you know, defending champions and had tournament success. And,
right.
Of course, Jim Calhoun had them rolling.
Yeah. Tennessee took care of them too. I mean, it wasn't really that close of a game. So that's when everybody started feeling good, because your next opponent in the Sweet 16 was North Carolina, but it was an 8-seed North Carolina team under Bill Gethridge, who wasn't entirely that successful after succeeding Dean Smith. But that game, if you had won that game, you were going to be playing Tulsa under Bill Self for a chance to go to the Final Four. And it was not, you know, Tulsa had a great record, but that was an absolutely beatable team to get to the Final Four.
Well, no, yeah, like your seeding could have been, you know, the, what, 13 seed, the 5 seed, the 8 seed, the 7 seed, and then even Florida, who was in the Final Four and went to the national championship to lose to Michigan State.
Yeah.
They were just a 5 seed. So, like, Tennessee was the higher seed, or I guess lower seed, the better seed. Could have been the better seed in their game all the way to the national championship, where they would have lost to Michigan State. Like, that to me is a big squandered opportunity. And that's one that also, Bob, that Tennessee just choked away. They had a lead throughout most of that game. And I went back and watched that game on YouTube last year and was just kind of really frustrated. Like, I want to say Tennessee was up like 7 with like 5 or 6 minutes left, and then just like didn't score the rest of the game.
There's a story that goes, it wasn't necessarily on the live game, but there was a microphone that picked up Gethridge in a North Carolina timeout, and it was probably around that 5-6 minute mark, saying, "Just keep doing what we do, they will fold." That he goes, "That's what we know about them." I mean, that's literally what he said, and exactly what happened, man. It was tough to watch. It was there. That was right there for that team. Go to another Elite Eight, very likely could get to the Final Four.
Is that what got Bill Self the Kansas job the next year? Was that, did that line up?
No, it got Bill Self the Illinois job.
Okay, yeah, because Roy Williams didn't leave until, like, what, like 2003 or so?
Yeah. He did
2004.
He did a handful of seasons at Illinois and then moved from there.
Yeah,
and then, you know, the trivia question is who took over for Bill Self? It was Buzz Peterson at Tulsa for one season. Got him to the NIT final, and then he parlayed that into the Tennessee job.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have liked to have heard the meltdown in 2000, to been on the radio, or at least been old enough to just have enough angry friends to hear the phone calls and how mad people would have been at that meltdown. Because, yeah, you were up 62-55 with 6 minutes left. And, you know, you just pretty much didn't score again. Or at least a field goal again. I think you had two free throws to go up. You're up 64-57 with 4:30 left. And then you
score 5 points from there on.
Yeah, and I think like you hit a three at the buzzer or something of garbage time. Like,
yeah,
you just completely fell apart and blew that game that could have gotten you to the Elite Eight. Well, yeah, like while waiting on a 7-seed Tulsa team.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough. I mean, that's more than any of these teams, these other teams that we talk about. I remember as a fan, that was the season where I was like, man, this is it. They're going to a Final Four after beating Connecticut and looking at who you had next in line. It just was so incredibly set up in a good way for Tennessee, and they missed it. They missed it.
Sam, don't ever waste your time going back to watch this game either. It's so gross. It's such gross basketball.
So we agree, Sam, you're just going to have to fall in line because you weren't even on the planet at that point. But we think that's the biggest missed opportunity, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, just when you look at the entire bracket, if you're talking about just getting to the Final Four, then, like, I think you can go back to 18 or 19, or especially 18, like against Loyola. That set up really, really well, too, when you look at that, especially, like, knowing, being equipped with the knowledge that Kentucky blew that game. You could say that, like, the year that you lost to Michigan, you would have played the 8-seed Kentucky team, right? That was the 8-seed Kentucky team that went to the national championship, right?
Yes.
That had beaten Wichita State. I believe that's how it worked out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, both of those were pretty set up, too. I told you it was, what, 64-57 with 4.5 minutes left?
Yeah.
So they went on a 13-0 run. It's 70-64 with 22 seconds left. Can you imagine that meltdown you'd have been having?
And again, what was so embarrassing was to hear, again, the opponent telling his team, man, we're good. We got this. These guys don't know how to hold a lead.
These guys suck. They'll fold.
We're Carolina. They're Tennessee. That was kind of the whole vibe.
Well, you know, that was going to be my one pushback, and I know they were coached by some guy named, what'd you say, Bill Guthridge, which he doesn't really get his just due in the North Carolina line of prestige. No one ever really talks about the Bill Guthridge years, at least that I know of.
No.
But, like, it did come down to, hey, it's Tennessee playing North Carolina. So, like, there would be that doubt of, like, hey, you are playing a blue blood, a program that's going to get it done, and, yeah, they're, like, 20-14 in the ACC that year or whatever it was. Like, they weren't a good team, but it was still North Carolina. Whereas, like I said, when you look at the way 2018 opened up and you're playing, like, Loyola, and then you would have gotten, like, Nevada and Kansas State, I think that opened up maybe just as good, if not better. I don't really know what Bill Self had at Tulsa, but knowing that, like, he became a legendary coach, you at least give him a little bit of a rub. Like, yeah, Musselman's been good at Arkansas, and, like, the Martin twins were solid, you know, really good college players and solid in the NBA, but, like, I would have taken my chances against him in Nevada in that Sweet 16. I think that opened up just as open.
I don't think you mentioned the 2014 team, and I think I was just so – I mean, I was brokenhearted when they lost to Michigan, but I was so shocked that they were even that far along. I didn't have a whole lot of faith in them, even if they got to an Elite Eight.
Tennessee, in 2014 was actually just on the right side finally of, like, the way the bracket was seeded.
Yep.
Like, yeah, you had to play in the first four, but once you survived Iowa, you looked and it was like UMass, and then who was it that beat Duke that year? Mercer. Like, yeah, you got to beat UMass and Mercer to get to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
But, like, that team had talent, and, like, you had just been waiting all year for it to actually click, and then it finally started clicking. Like, I think that team was good enough to make a Final Four, too, when you look at had they beaten Michigan. I would have taken my chances against that Kentucky team for sure.
Yeah.
Those damn Harrison twins.
The Ohio State game that we talked about, we mentioned to Sam earlier, Tennessee was up 17 at half.
You're making me sad, Bob.
That's what. Well, I'm just saying this is an opportunity. There's been missed opportunities. This one's hard, man. And imagine if we get to the Elite Eight or even a Final Four. Just imagine that's like that becomes historic accomplishment. That's the way I'm looking at it. It's not. Whatever happens at this point, I'm of the belief that we can't come back next week if we're not advancing to the Final Four being like, God, this season, what a failure. I mean, it's like we're playing great teams at this point. We just got to ride with them.
See, I don't know if I can feel like it wasn't a failure if we come back next week or not in the Final Four, because all you're telling me is that we do fail. That's all you're telling me. It wouldn't be unique failure. But, like, we need a damn baptism is what we need. We need to wash away these tournament letdowns and these big moments. That's what I'm hearing. Like,
I totally agree. What I'm saying is this has been a history of missed opportunities against teams where it's like you look at the matchups and it's like, what the hell, man? How did that happen? Even against Ohio State, you dominated the first half. How do you lose that game? How do you end up losing?
Because they had Greg Oden.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how. They had Greg Oden and you didn't.
Remember, Ryan Childress went nuts in that game in the first half.
I don't remember because I was on a cruise and they went and showed the game. Like, like that was before they put everything just, like, on all these channels. So, like, the cruise line's local was not Tennessee, Ohio State. I didn't get to see it until the second half, surrounded by Ohio State fans. So I didn't get to see Ryan Childress going crazy. I just kept seeing the score go up and up and up. Because you couldn't even really be on the internet. You didn't really know what was happening. You just kept seeing up and up and up. You're like, come on, let's go. And then, just in time to see us, like, completely choke the lead away.
Yeah, listener pops in on the Ohio State game. If we had won, Tennessee would have played Memphis in the Elite Eight. Tennessee had blown them out earlier in the season. And then you would play Florida in the Final Four. You would beat them twice that season.
That would be a sick matchup, too. You just get the in-state rivalry for the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Go on to play Florida.
You'd matched up well against Florida. You know, that was Florida back-to-back national champion team. And, like, I don't know if you'd have gotten them actually in the tournament. But, like, they were obviously really good. But you matched up well with them. You were kind of their kryptonite a little bit. And that was a wasted opportunity. Tennessee's wasted a lot of opportunities. Like, I do think it'd be fitting if they were able to actually kind of advance and break through by beating Chalk, by beating – you know, the toughest matchup in every round. The 7, the 3, the 1. That would be kind of fitting because you have wasted opportunities against teams that were, you know, lucky to be there in that round or lucky to advance. With all that being said, I do think this team is just as equipped as any to advance, even considering the matchup.
Yeah. Just think how great it's going to feel if they do. I mean, it's because you're again, it's a gauntlet, man. It's kind of like the Maui Invitational all over again, but this time we need to win them.
You have made 9 Sweet 16s prior to this year. You've had 9 Sweet 16 games. It feels like a statistical anomaly that you've only won one of them. To be 1-8 in 9 of those, if you believe in progression to the mean, you need to win like 2 or 3 of these in a row. You need to roll off a couple Elite Eights in a row. 1-8?
I agree.
I understand that Tennessee wasn't, you know, necessarily favored in all those 9 games, but they were favored in enough of them. That was one of the best nights of my sports fandom, though, watching my boy J.P. Prince lock down Evan Turner.
Wasn't he the one that got the block?
Yeah, that's what I said. My boy locked him down, clamped him up.
God, that was great.
Clamped him up, my boy. A damn 13-0 run, Sam. You're up 64-57 with 4.5 minutes left, and you get blown out, basically. Watching these highlights, if you tell me basketball used to be better, I don't agree. I don't agree. I've seen enough highlights of the 90s NBA and the 2000s NBA and these old college basketball games. Basketball did not used to be better. No thanks. Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three. We'll talk a little Joe Milton Pro Day. We'll keep talking hoops. Stick with us.
Hey, guys.